Regardless of where you stand regarding the conflict of Ukraine, it is a fact that with every military conflict, there are innocent victims of that conflict. And we are seeing that in the millions of people that are being displaced from their homes with potentially no home to return to. So for as long as the conflict is going on, I'm including this segment with every one of my podcast episodes, an opportunity for us to take a minute and a moment for those who are suffering because of the conflict. For those of you who wish to participate, please hit the pause button for a moment for a thought or a prayer. There is continued and urgent need for humanitarian assistance. There are many respectable and notable organizations out there, and I am appealing to all of you to provide support in whatever way you are comfortable with. I know that we are all going through difficult times, so even if you're not in a position to make donations, helping to spread the word would be immensely helpful. With the help of some groups that I belong to, I've compiled a list of some organizations that are helping with the current conflict. And you can find this list at www.coyote.com/Ukraine. While it's not a comprehensive list, it does offer us a place to start. Once again, that's coyote.com/Ukraine. Thank you for listening to this. I don't often get involved in causes because there are just too many. But while this conflict might hopefully soon be resolved, the humanitarian need will be ongoing for quite some time. Please find a couple of minutes to see how you can help. And like I said, even if it's just to help spread the word, that would be wonderful and amazing. Thank you.
For a lot of people, real estate is something that we think about for our homes. And when we have accumulated a little bit of wealth, we might think of another one for rental property. But all this that we hear in the news quite often is just the residential real estate side. But on the other side, there is also commercial real estate, which we don't hear a whole lot about in the news. So I am very happy, glad, privileged, and honored to have with us today Michael Davidson from RE/MAX Realtron. How are you doing, Michael?
Hello, Thomas. I'm doing fantastic. I've just had back-to-back meetings today with some property owners who are all looking to get started with some leasing. So I'm happy to be working with some office building opportunities after quite a number of months of being sort of idle. And how are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you very much. So I think the first thing that people might want to know is, what's the difference between having a residential realtor versus a commercial realtor?
Well, there's a lot of differences in our skill sets. For example, the knowledge that is obtained by working in the commercial real estate industry in the first few years can be very daunting. There's a lot of nuances and terminology that can kind of make a residential realtor feel outside of their skin. They can feel that they're out of their league, or can be not so confident as a realtor should be when it comes to some of the skills that a commercial realtor learns in the beginning. That really I find is where a lot of residential realtors come to me asking me for help with situations, because they just don't feel like they're in their normal day-to-day type of business when it comes to the commercial deals. And I think there's also just the experience that you get with your clients that I've been able to learn a lot from my clients over the years, from my customers. They tell me a lot of things that I don't know, and that's kind of how it goes. As you do learn from your from as a residential realtor learns from their clients about what things they like, they don't like, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a few examples of the types of the information or skill set that you need as a commercial realtor versus a residential realtor?
Good question. I've studied accounting over the years in school, small business management, and entrepreneurship, and also a little bit of law. There's a lot of detail, in between the lines, so to speak, with the legal aspects. There's a numbers understanding as well when it comes to understanding leases and some of the mortgage details. And I wouldn't say that it's overwhelming, but there needs to be a basic math, like business math, that you need to have. But sales, negotiating, that's probably the biggest, experience that you need to have when it comes to the relationships that you have with people and helping people to be a decision maker, because they're coming to you for advice on what they should be doing. So, being a good listener is also a good skill.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, when it comes to negotiation, from what I understand, and I mean, I only have a very pedestrian understanding of it, but it sounds to me like there's a lot more wiggle room when it comes to commercial real estate to negotiate with. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a negotiation, and I'm learning more and more that you just need to go through that process. It's a participatory situation, and people need to have someone who understands their situation, their needs and wants, and also know what the other side is willing to do. So it's for a lot of people, the feeling that it is a process, and like without that process, it just wouldn't be that experience that does make real estate exciting.
Mm. Without getting into, the names and the properties involved, can you provide a few examples, like something specific?
With a selling price that a seller has for a commercial property and what the buyer is willing to pay, usually they're never what the seller asks for. There's usually some, wiggle room. So the buyer will sometimes come in a lot lower. There needs to be a meeting in the middle sometimes. If there isn't a number of people all, competing for a property, there's a normal kind of a negotiation, which is something that people haven't seen a lot in the residential market lately, because there's been a lot of pent up demand. The buyer, he sees that the seller is willing to come down a little bit, or maybe coming down a lot, depending on how motivated they are. And when you have the communication with a realtor, commercial realtor, and the seller's realtor, there's a dialogue, there's a communication.
Mm-hmm.
Negotiating, it's a much different element, I think.
No, but how is that different than a residential realtor?
Finding a commercial realtor who just understands the process, that you don't have irrevocables at 11:59 p.m. at night for a commercial deal. Or do they have them on the weekends? Most guys cut out for Friday afternoon, maybe even Thursday night, and they're gone till Monday. And that happens a lot. It used to happen a lot, although now I think with communication, there's a lot of things that do happen over the weekends and after hours.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of eating, drinking, and sleeping in the industry and commercial as well.
I'm sure. So in terms, if somebody is going to be looking for, right now, coming out of this pandemic, there's a lot of people looking for different options now, right? A lot of people are now self-employed and getting into business for themselves. What are some things that that people should be taking into consideration? I know, when a lot of times we're talking about location, 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 right? But aside from that, is there anything, deeper than that, than that people should be thinking about?
Yeah, I think it's about doing a study for a small business owner, any business owner, to know like a business plan typical gathering of research on, you know, where your competitors are, what are the drivers to your business that will generate customers, like the basics on site selection is what I usually go through with in my head now, because I've been doing this for long enough. Having a good idea of you know, what their basic size requirements are, why are they those requirements, for how many people do they have, and what is their budget, and in terms of like what they think they should be paying, because sometimes price gets confused with quality location, and to get a good location sometimes requires to pay a little bit more than what they're comfortable doing to achieve what they really want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, getting caught up on trying to find a good deal may not actually at the end of the day be conducive to what they're trying to achieve, whether it's for a retail location or for an office space. And you know, there's a lot of things that business owners kind of like to have, like being close to their home, for example. So that can outweigh the decision for where their staff's coming from, being a bigger factor where, you know, if you've got a subway just outside your door or a bus stop to get your staff there, that's still going to be a major factor as we find more and more GO train stations and bus shelters being important, like location requirements.
Okay. And you just said right just now something, you mentioned site requirements. What do you mean by site requirements?
Well, I cover all areas of real estate, office, retail, and industrial. And the questions that I go through are like a drill when I talk to a potential business owner who wants space. I'll ask them, do they need a truck level dock, for example, if it's some warehouse or industrial space, or do they need a drive-in door? How much power do they need? Do they need how much percentage of office space to warehouse do they need, and ceiling heights usually are an important thing when they need to have a lot of storage space and clearance. And with the site requirements maybe being near a highway, the 407 or a 401, the other side of the coin is maybe with looking for office space, I get a company that would need to have staff that like open windows. They might like a kitchenette as well.
So when it comes to these site requirements, does it make a big difference in terms of the types of buildings that they're in?
Yes. Yeah, so for example, with office space tenants, they're looking for something that usually will have a kitchenette, for example. Maybe it's an ensuite washroom, and they'll need maybe a lobby reception with a room for a boardroom, and maybe the two leaders of the company, that they will need their own private office. There's considerations that have to go into whether that's existing or whether a landlord will have to build that out for them. Retail is a very different animal, and it needs to be site specific based on location, even the side of the street that it's on, and near certain other types of businesses. It needs to have a certain type of width frontage, maybe a wider frontage, and depending on what the kind of equipment is inside or what kind of a showroom that they have, there needs to be a certain size, height, ceiling, you know, excess space for storage, like a basement, used to be something you could just take for granted. It would come along with the space, and you could use that extra space, not have to pay for it. But some landlords are looking at that space as rentable, and so they'll find a way to create a doorway to a basement. And if it's got a ceiling height that's really high, they can rent that out to someone else for another use. And choices of location based on the traffic is also important. If you're going to be in an area where you're requiring walk-by traffic and you're not on that high traffic area because you say you wanted to save a couple thousand dollars, well, that extra, those sales have basically evaporated because you're not going to have anybody coming to your door if you rely on that kind of a non-high traffic street to be located. You can have a great sign and use all the, you know, the social media and marketing that you want, but if there isn't people walking by your store on a day-to-day basis because they're going to the office or the subway, that can really hurt a business. And it has. In the city of Toronto, a lot of businesses have been affected. No, there are opportunities for great locations at this very moment. And it really requires you to know what kind of sales you're going to do in that location because of the traffic. So, you know, justifying the price that you pay, you know, based on how much sales you're going to do is kind of a rule of thumb. If you're going to be doing sales of, say, $1 million, typically a business can pay 10% is what I've heard recently, but it depends on the type of business that it is as well.
Right. So for a small business owner who's thinking about moving into a space, what is there a decision factor that they should be thinking of in terms of lease versus buy?
Today, in this environment, that decision can be looked at as being how much is my rent and how much would be my mortgage. It's always a good decision to make for a business owner to buy the property because they don't have those renegotiations every 3 years, 5 years with the landlord and regrettably paying those price increases because they always are increasing over time. Yeah, I think that it's always the best move to own a building if you can find it. And so commercial condos has been one of the easiest places that I've helped companies find and own their units. And when they do the numbers and paying condo fees, their mortgage fee, you know, they're just paying slightly higher than what they would with a mortgage, but they own it, you know, and that is an investment for the people who want to participate in that investment.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Now you mentioned there about modifications that a landlord might make for a tenant.
Yeah.
Are there limitations to that, or is it just up to the landlord?
It really depends on the landlord and their ability to do it. Some landlords, they don't get involved. They don't want to be involved with the process too often. The tenants get their own contractors to come in and do the work, and the landlord might give them an allowance, say maybe 2 months free, maybe without paying the TMI, and then they start paying the TMI, which means taxes, maintenance, insurance, or their additional costs, just to cover the landlord's expenses. But they'll give them an inducement period, which is like an allowance, or they'll cut the tenant a check maybe for, say, half of the cost of what the improvements would be, because the improvements are always just for the tenant. And that's a really important thing for tenants to understand, is what, like, they come to a landlord and say, well, I need to have this space look like this, but it's not going to be good for the next tenant who comes along. Perhaps they need something completely different. So landlords have learned over the years to limit how much money they'll spend on a tenant's specific needs that are only good for them, because if they don't stay for that whole term, maybe they move out after 12 months.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm. So I mean, that's like you're saying, that's part of the negotiation process. Yeah.
In leasing for office, there's a lot more detail that goes into it. It's spelling it out. It's writing out each detail.
Yeah, that makes sense. So can you guide us through a little bit of your process? A potential client has come to you and said that they're looking for a unit. So where do you go from there? What's the process that you take with a client?
The process that I find works most effectively for me is when a potential tenant, a company that's existing that has an assistant to the president or manager, office manager, who will be involved with facilitating an expansion or a relocation, and they want to discuss with me what they need, and we're already in that process of working together. We've been referred to each other. There's a good trust. They understand, you know, my experience, and they want to work with me, and that's why we're having a conversation. And they kind of spell it out on how they would like to interact with me. That I can email them that I can operate and conduct business with them in this manner by us getting together. Once we find locations with the owner, I'll just send them properties and we can quickly sort of go through how they would like to engage and interact with me in the process of what they need to find, and having a set time frame for when they would like to achieve their objectives. So you have to be ready to engage in that relationship with the realtor and be working with them pretty much, say, over at least, to say, I would, a 3 to 6 week period, where you're looking at, you're finding space, looking at space, and then negotiating on the space to the point when you've transacted, you've made a transaction, and found a location, and all along the way, I'm usually assisting them with my team, with other people who are involved, such as maybe a lawyer, office furniture moving company, maybe it's someone who deals with putting up signage outside their building. There's many people that can be brought into a transaction through my network. That we have that I can introduce people that can be of additional assistance to them in making that process a lot easier and smoother for them.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, thank you very much. And if people have more questions, is there a way that they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, my website's michaeldavidson.realestate. I've got a LinkedIn page as well, and I'm on Twitter. I'm also active on Instagram and Facebook. So happy to connect with people whichever way they like to.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I will have all this information in the show notes. Michael, thank you very much for doing this. I really much appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a great week, Thomas.
You too. This podcast can be found on Spotify, iTunes, and all the other podcatchers. Please rate and recommend to help with the algorithms and to grow this community. And please let us know your suggestions about things that you'd like for us to talk about, or if you just want to chat. We can best be reached at podcast@coyote.com. I'm Thomas, and thank you for listening to the Coyote Small Business Podcast.